Hey yo, everybody, welcome to We Talk Comics. It's back on the air and in your ear once again. I am Mo, and I am joined by the three best co-hosts a person could possibly have. We're going to go around the room. This show is number 64. It is called the We Talk Comics Laugh Olympics. And that's because this is a show going to be dedicated to humor, funniest characters, funniest creators, funniest stories, funniest issues, whatever we want. We're going to talk about what makes us laugh in comic books and our favorite funny stuff. So we're going to go around the room, and the best way for everybody to introduce themselves this week is probably to say their favorite joke. I'm going to go to the man I've known the longest.
All right, I'm Brett, and my favorite joke, the one that I can most remember currently, is two guys walk into a bar, one ducks.
Damn it, there goes Mark.
Come on. It was either that or look a dead bird, but that doesn't work on a podcast.
No, it doesn't, because you have to look up in the air going, where, where? And that's more of a visual joke. So we told it anyways. Oh, Henry Youngman, we love you.
Two for the price of one.
Two for the price of one. So, thanks, Brett. Okay, Chris, your turn.
I'm Chris, and the only joke I can remember right now is what time does Sean Connery arrive at Wimbledon? 10-ish 2.
Oh, this was not a good idea, this telling jokes to open. Who thought of this?
It would have been a good idea if we were warned beforehand.
Or if we knew any either. Jokes.
Keith, what do you got? Please tell me it's better than that.
No. I'm going to do my two favorite punchlines. The whole joke isn't worth the time. Of course it's a female sheep. What do you think I am, some kind of weirdo? And then the Pope says, but she has to have big tits.
Yeah, actually, you know, the punchlines are funnier. Skip the jokes.
Oh, my favorite joke. A man walks into a psychiatrist's office wearing nothing but saran wrap. The psychiatrist looks at him and says, well, I can clearly see you're nuts. Now, we're moving on. Oh, I'm Mo, by the way. If I didn't mention, probably did. Of course, if you want to laugh a little bit in comic books, that's fine. But if you want the news, if you want reviews, if you want previews, if you want all that good stuff, the best place to go is from our sponsor of our weekly news segment, the weekly news to cover Porter K. That's Comicosity. Comicosity continues to expand, adding new writers, talented people who are giving their opinions all the time on the site. It is the comic book's best website for all of your needs. Anybody disagree with that? I'll fight them.
Indian leg wrestle?
Indian leg wrestle. I think it's now First Nation leg wrestle, Brett. Don't be inappropriate. Anyways. Comicosity, visit them. And now, the weekly news with Cup Reporter K.
All right, quiet week for news. But we do have a couple of things coming up. Francisco Francavilla will be joining Matt Fraction on Hawkeye with issue 10. Francisco has been a busy guy. This will be an interesting mix on
what's happening
Hawkeye.
To David Aja?
I imagine that they'll be cycling. Most of the Marvel books, because of the schedule, most of the Marvel books are being set up with revolving artists. And that's why you saw Cassidy come off of Uncanny Avengers. Mm-hmm. Stegman's
well,
only
that,
doing
plus
three issues.
Plus, he finished two issues in 8 months.
Well, we're seeing that with Stegman on Superior Spider-Man as well. He did three issues. Another artist will do three or four. And they're cycling three artists on Superior Spider-Man, so expect that.
Is this a good idea for them to be doing this? What do you guys think? I mean, it's certainly not what I grew up with.
Yeah, as long as it's story arc based, I think. And planned.
I think it's planned. I mean, certainly certainly it hasn't always worked with DC. I mean, they started doing fill-ins to stay on schedule because they had made that promise that there would be no late books. Or a few late books, anyway, in the New 52. And they've mostly done a good job on that. They've only had a couple things slide here and there. But it doesn't seem as planned. I mean, what Marvel's doing is you know, Stegman was announced that he would do 1-3, and then someone else is going to do the next the next few issues. Kind of like when it's a flow like that.
Well, and the reason I bring this up is it's just a good idea. I kind of go back to our Super Summit that we did, where we had together a bunch of creators. One of them was, of course, the artist of Intrepid's, Scott Kowalczyk, friend of the show, and he talked about how he thinks one of the things that will be good for the future of the industry and help it be the sales and be more successful is for people to start following artists instead of writers again. He thinks that's actually a negative, and he had some good points on that. So when I look at this, it really does make the artists seem like they're just the hired guns who are the least important part of the project almost.
Well, there's a cycle to that. I mean, you know, it's a topic that we were going to get into a long time ago, but when we were, you know, kind of serious big-time collectors in the early 90s, it was all following artists, and you barely knew the names of the writers. And then the Image boom happened, and DC and Vertigo particularly started getting, you know, the writers, Neil Gaiman, Garth Ennis, Warren Ellis, those names that became, you know, the guys that you should follow around. And it kind of swung at that point.
It also seems to me if they're doing this, is going to continue to foster an idea of a Marvel House style, which, again, I don't know if that's really good. I mean, like I said, I think the quality of the art out there is better than it's ever been, but I'm not sure that I like the idea of innovative and new artists. I mean, if you have an art style, then some of my favorite artists in the past wouldn't have an opportunity.
Having a revolving artist does give Marvel a little bit more leeway in picking more non-traditional artists.
But they don't seem to.
Well, we have Allred and Aja that was on a Hawkeye. I don't think it's heading towards a house style. I think for a short run, you're more apt to, well, let's give this guy a try. Let's see if it works.
I don't consider Allred's style to be, you know, Aja, yeah. I mean, it doesn't look like anything else. Allred's is more of a throwback style, but not completely out of place.
Wow. I don't know what to say to that, because I think his stuff is like nobody else's. I mean, it is the throwback, but
it's a throwback style.
Mean,
it is like nobody else's.
I can recognize his work at 10 paces.
That's true.
Over anybody else's, even from back in the day.
That's true. I'll give you that. It is. But that's because it's a throwback style. But I don't really think as far as a style that feels like it feels like still like it takes place in a superhero universe. It feels in place in Marvel. It doesn't feel out of place there. Whereas Aja is, I think, a little bit more like the type of artist you generally see at Image, actually.
Saying that I think shorter runs encourage more of this.
Okay, you've given us two, though. I mean, if you've given us two and they have 50, if they have 50 artists, name another book like that, though.
Off the top of my head. Oh, who's on Winter Soldier right now?
Butch Reese, isn't it?
Yeah, no, his stuff is gorgeous and completely different than anything else.
I don't know about that.
Well, I feel like he was kind of taking off of the Steve Epting.
Yeah.
Stuff, yeah. But I'm thinking of Alex Maleev.
Alex Maleev, I'll give you that. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. But there's not an awful lot of them. I mean, DC does have a house style, and so does Marvel. They are slightly different, but I'm just not sure this will foster more. I mean, if that's your hope, Chris, I hope you're right.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's better than the time in Marvel where everything was drawn by a Kubrick.
I don't think we ever had everything drawn by a Kubrick.
Or like, a clone thereof.
We might have had three books a month drawn by two Kubricks combined, if we were lucky.
Or a Kubert?
Kubert's probably.
Kubert, yes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Kubrick. If we had a Kubrick drawing, that would have been totally different.
The 8,700-page graphic novel and nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
And a new version of it comes out every 10 days. With pages rearranged.
So Francisco is on for issues 10 and 12 of Hawkeye. All right, Marvel Now hardcover editions... which, of course, with the accelerated publication, they'll have enough for omnibuses by midsummer. They've announced that all of the hardcover collections will come with digital codes. They are packaged just like the $3.99 books. You get the digital included for no extra value, no extra price except for the dollar more that you're paying automatically.
No extra price except for that buck. Does the idea that, of them doing this eventually make it so that people start to, because they become used to it, they start to just do it instinctively, just go to the digital? Is that kind of the thing that we might see out of this? Or
I'm quite surprised, actually, that what I'm seeing more and more of, and Dan Slott has kind of actually been one of the people that's pushed this idea, is the print customers giving away the digital copy of their book. Mm-hmm. On Twitter and elsewhere, people are starting to swap them. I've heard of some message boards that people are trading digital codes. They're one-time use, so, it's not a piracy outlet. I mean, you're well within your bounds to hand away the code.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty neat. Yeah, somebody's bought something.
I was given a couple. That's been kind of cool. I actually tried Uncanny Avengers second issue, which I wasn't going to, because someone gave me a code.
Okay.
But yeah, all those collections. They kicked us off with the AVX Avengers versus X-Men, I should say. Omnibus, which was 50 issues or something in it, and there were a lot of stories of people that were, someone would kick in a few bucks to the person buying the print copy because it came with a Comixology code that would get you the entire Omnibus digital. So there were people that certainly saving some bucks by just pitching in together.
Well, kind of my question was more along the lines of, If somebody has never tried digital before, and the first time they try it is because they happen to have that digital code, they try it a couple times and they like it, will it drive them away from the print copies eventually? Because then they'll just go, you know what, I can just get that Comixology app and continue to do this. I'm just wondering if that possibility exists, anybody think?
Certainly comic stores were worried about when this program was introduced. I don't think... The program's been around for about a year now, and I don't think it's happened. I mean, the numbers are up in digital, and the numbers are up in print.
Okay. What else you got there, Keith?
And Kyle Baker, good old Kyle Baker, who we quite love, and one of Kyle Baker's books was a Secret Santa book. Yes. Over our Christmas.
And if we're talking humor and comic books, we'll be talking some more Kyle Baker, I'm sure.
Well, and Kyle Baker on his website, qualityjollity.com, you can read embedded in the website 8 creator-owned graphic novels for free.
Nice.
He has including Why I Hate Saturn.
Including
I'm doing
why
a garbage patch right now.
We've got 2 books of The Bakers, which I'm not familiar with. We've got
That's,
Why I Hate...
Just his The Bakers is like his just his family, just his own family, like a comedy take on that.
We've got Why I Hate Saturn. We've got How to Draw Stupid. Special Forces, which has a very provocative cover. We have Nat Turner. King David, You Are Here, and I Die at Midnight, all available for free.
That's kind of awesome.
Quite a neat idea.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, why not? I mean, we talk about some of those books, Why I Hate Saturn, for instance, I think is out of print right now.
I think all that stuff's out of print, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, why should it be in this day and age on the internet? Why should, if he owns the creator rights, why should any of it be out of print? Go sample his work. He's a national treasure for you Americans.
And that's the news.
That's the news. All right. Brett, let's move into comedy. What makes you laugh in comic books?
It's less than one might think. I'm a pretty tough guy to make laugh overall, and so I think it's hard to do. Like most of the humor books, I actually tend to try them. And give up on them pretty quickly. It's either has to be really extreme or just subtle enough to get a little elicit a little smile from me and then move on. There's not a lot of big out loud like I'm weeping moments except for, you know, one time in comic books.
One time ever?
One time ever. Got me laughing to the point where I just couldn't do anything else.
Nice. And Chris, what makes you laugh?
One line. Stupid rat creatures.
That makes me laugh every time too.
Yeah.
Bone,
no,
little Bone.
Bone, the only time I was reading comics in public and I completely lost it. It just I almost fell off my chair. I was laughing so hard, and I was sitting all by myself just reading comic books. The entire place was looking at me. It was really embarrassing, but it was also really funny. I think it's those surprise moments that just come out of nowhere, and you're like, I should have saw that coming. That's what I find funny in comic books.
How about you, Keith?
I like a lot of the self-aware, self-referential comic book form stuff. Stuff like What the Marvel published, Ambush Bug from DC. That kind of stuff that plays with, you know, the silliness of, you know, the superhero genre that we take so seriously. I'm not a big humor comic fan, actually. I was thinking as we approached this topic that I didn't read any humor comics, but then I racked my brain and came up with a few that that maybe I'm not as hard-hearted as I thought.
Oh, you're pretty. You got no heart.
I know there's one book that that has a humor bent to it, which you are a big fan of.
See, I know that the guys are baiting me because they're trying to see how long I can go without talking about Booster Gold.
Well, Booster Gold is in the comic I'm thinking of.
I'll tell you guys what makes me laugh. I think life is funny. I mean, I think life is a series of we're at work, you know, we make each other laugh. We crack jokes. And I think life is more funny than anything else during the day. I mean, I think that's what gives it its tapestry, the wild tapestry of life that makes it worth living. So I think that what makes me laugh is generally humor that comes from everyday situations and feels natural and it feels like part of the universe. Because in my world, I laugh all the time and we make other people laugh. I think that's what life is. Life is laugh. A lot of little laughs, rarely big laughs, rarely things you remember, but a lot of little laughs all the time. And then a sad moment or a dramatic moment is the big moment. And then you go back to little laughs.
And then all topped off with cheese dip.
All topped up. And I think the majority, of humor in comic books, I think, reflects that. I think it's, yeah, it reflects the idea of laugh. I'm enjoying myself. Big moment then. And it reflects life like that way. A big dramatic moment, big sad moment. So what role do you think...
Who publishes the book called Life?
Pardon me?
Who publishes this comic book called Life? I've never collected that one.
Well, for me, it was my parents. now, we can move on again here. Brett, what role do you think humor has or should play in comic books then?
Well, I think it's important, but because...
There's humor right now watching your cat shove its yeah. Tongue up your nose, or not its tongue, its tail up your nose,
and then
jump on your head trying to get your attention. There's lots of, see, like I said, little laughs, that's life. Anyways, you're saying...
I think to the right person, you know, that's the problem. I mean, the right person, it's hard to make somebody laugh, and so you need to have the right person writing for exactly the right person. And humor books don't tend to do all that well, I think. But there are fantastic characters that are very funny that when they do them, I think they shouldn't even bring them out all that often. I mean, you talk about Ambush Bug, Keith, and he's a great example of that. Like, you pull him out every now and then and he's funny.
Oh, absolutely.
if you pull him out all the time, he's not funny.
Yeah. I'm gonna go to what you said. Lobo was funny, as long as we didn't see him in every single book or read a monthly series. But it does only one joke. It stops being funny eventually. I mean, I read that series, that one joke, many, many times, and it still made me laugh. But there was a saturation point. It's the law of diminishing returns for a lot of characters like that. What about you, Chris? What do you think kind of the role, what role do you think humor does or should play in comic books?
Well, as with the rest of you guys, I know not a lot of us collect a purely humor book, but I think most of our favorite books have some humor in them. Peter David's The Hulk, for example. Very, very funny book, but it was interspersed with adventure and other types of stories. I think a pure humor book is one of the rarest of comic books that, if you can find one, great, but there are no large runs, with the only exception I can think of is Gru, of a book that can last 100 issues and be funny. I think a lot of the times there are limited series that I'll go back to and I really enjoyed. But really, I think humor is best in small doses in comic books. I mean, that's probably the reason that humor sometimes works better in a comic strip rather than a full comic book.
Yeah, I definitely want to get into comic strips, too, when we're talking about this at some point. Keith, what do you think? What role do you think it has or should play?
I think that some dark humor is good. I do think that it's hard to maintain a comedy concept. I think of something like Deadpool that was so clever when that series first launched in the mid-90s, and every time I look at one now, it's the same joke that they've been telling for nearly 20 years. Comedy comes from situations. There's a reason why it's called a situation comedy and not a comedy half hour. The situation is what gives the comedy, and the characters are what give the comedy. But you have to keep moving things along. With comics, particularly Marvel and DC, is not a process of moving things along. It's about incremental glacial change that doesn't actually change the status quo. And for something like say Deadpool, 20 years of status quo of the same joke.
And he becomes Lobo.
He becomes Lobo. I think one of the reasons why comedy, when we talk about pure comedy series and they don't last is because, I mean, ultimately comic books are supposed to be, it's a sense of conflict, and it's really, really tough to create conflict all the time around comedy. It's much easier to create conflict around relationships or villains or that type of thing. To create conflict, if you don't have anything to push the story forward, then how do you not get stale and be the same every single time? Even Gru, as much as I love Gru and I talk about the character and the book makes me laugh all the time, to be 100% honest, there's times where I enjoyed the on-running gags of the letter column more than the issue itself. The on-running somebody bringing up, and what's mulch? And they would print the definition of mulch, or talk about cheese dip, or they would ask people to send in your favorite story of where somebody pulled a Gru, and people would write these in. And that, to me, sometimes was the book was kind of like, oh, I've read this story before. It's not this particular one, but it's the same thing as Gru. But it was the full package. Sometimes the letters page was the funniest part, and Mark Evanier ran the letter pages and was really witty with his responses, and it was great. So I mean, that helped a lot. So let's go back, Brett. Some of your favorite funny moments or funniest characters. Who do you think are the funniest characters?
Well, I think that Brew is super, super, super funny. And I do think of Ambush Bug when I think of funny characters. Characters that I think have their funny moments are Milk and Cheese.
Yeah. Yep.
And I've always been a fan of the Fabulous Furry Freak Brothers, especially Freddy's Cat. for the most part, the style of comics doesn't appeal to me, but Freddy's Cat just always worked for me, and I don't necessarily know why. I think that the Middleman has a lot of elements of humor, and so it's one of my favorite ones, and the TV series was great for that. You know, Bone, but like Chris said, you know, Bone's got some really nice stuff in it too. There's a lot of funny characters, and
the Tick. The Tick's freaking hilarious,
absolutely.
Guys. Tell me the Tick isn't great. Tick is hilarious.
I was waiting my turn before I expounded the joy of the Tick.
Oh, well, you take your turn now, then.
No. I'm going to throw at the goon before it gets taken.
Before it gets taken?
Yes. I love the goon. Eric Powell. You can go now.
I just reread those Ben Edlund Tick issues. The unfinished Tick that is, it started getting more and more of a gap between the issues as he started getting other work. And then the second last issue is called, it starts off with, you know, the Tick saying, I had this dream where 8 months went by and nothing happened. and then issue 12 ends to be continued, and that was, you know, 18 years ago or something.
Awesome.
No one ever got that character the way, I mean, there's so many other Tick comics, but none of them were ever as good as original animals.
You know, but if we're going to talk about the Tick, I'm going to throw out somebody who's kind of like a character I find some similarities to, and we also talked about Gru, so we'll just talk about Mighty Magnor, which is published from Malibu. Damn, I love me some Mighty Magnor, and that was Sergio Aragonés and Marco Bagnaia's take on a superhero type character there. So that was great.
What was the gimmick cover for Magnor?
Pop-up? I feel like it was a pop-up.
I think it was a pop-up. Yeah, I think it might have been. That sounds right.
Bagged pop-up? Yeah.
Something like that.
I remember the cover was Chris?
I loved it.
No, actually, Sergio, I don't think, other than his stuff in Mad and Gru, didn't like Fanboy. I didn't like a lot of his other creations.
I didn't like Fanboy either, I'll give you that. I love it with his words when he does the books, though. Just his panels only. Ones that were like the miniseries. I can't even remember what they're called, but like, you know, Sergio, whatever, laugh-ins. Anytime it's just him telling the story in humor without necessarily having to have the words. And he's such a master cartoonist that those are usually brilliant as well, I think. But,
Flaming Carrot, he's another one I love.
Pardon me?
Flaming Carrot's another one I love.
Flaming Carrot.
And let's not forget Scud, the disposable assassin.
Scud, the disposable assassin.
Craziest concept ever. I loved him. Got a video game and disappeared into forever. He's never been seen since.
When I get to these things, I talk about these funniest characters. Like a lot of my characters that are my favorite characters had humor to them, even if they weren't in a pure humor book. I mean, I think Spider-Man, there was points where he was hilarious, you know? Or Spider-Man, and yet there was always a drama underneath. But the Spider-Man character and the quips and the lightheartedness during the fights that made me laugh out loud, despite all the horror that could necessarily be going on around him in his personal life and the danger of the villains, is part of what made that character really, really, I think, you know, I think it's part of what made preteens and teenage boys really, really identify with him. And then I go back, we talk about Luke Cage being a favorite character of mine. The Power Man, when he was a Power Man character, he was a very funny character, you know, with Iron Fist. He had a lot of humor, not a humor book, but a lot of humor to it. Blue Devil, when it was at its best, the first 7 issues, was not a humor book, but was very, very funny. And then people kept on telling the creators how funny it was, and they morphed it into a comedy book, and it wasn't as funny anymore. Even something like Captain Carrot, which is funny the whole way around, no question. My favorite character is Pig Iron. Why? Funniest character.
See, it's funny you bring that, not Captain Carrot, but like the books that weren't funny to start, per se. Like, they had their elements of humor, but then they became too much in the way of humor, and
they wrecked them.
Yeah, although it's funny because one of my favorite characters started out not funny in the least. They made him a joke, but in that enjoyed him, and it became almost a second phase of the character, which I still enjoyed, and that's Blue Beetle. Because I love the Justice League version of the character, the fat Blue Beetle, you know, the blue and the gold and that kind of thing, because it's well written.
Yeah.
Like, the evolution of the character worked the way they were doing it.
And speaking of that run, does anyone else remember my favorite Green Lantern, Gnort?
Of course.
I had Gnort down as well as a great character, and my favorite comedy issue. I didn't know whether we were going to get into single issues or anything.
Let's do favorite single issues.
My favorite issue out of that whole run was the annual Justice League Antarctica.
they had to
put I always pronounced it Gnort. I know others say Gnort. You say Gnort, I say Gnort. Let's call the whole thing off.
But it was
the issue where they couldn't figure out what to do with Gnort and Scarlet Speedster, I think was one of the other characters, and the Injustice League guys. So they put them at Justice League Antarctica because they had a embassy there. And then they got attacked by killer penguins. It was awesome. Which was brilliant.
Come to think of it, I believe Hitman once fought killer penguins as well. Different killer penguins.
Hitman's a book that you could say was a comedy book.
Completely.
Yeah.
They had an entire issue during a crossover looking up at the sun going, I think those superheroes are pretty busy right about now. It was during the darkest night where the sun went out for the day, and well, there's nothing else to do on Earth. This is our crossover. We're going to sit around and drink beer.
Yeah, awesome. You know what? It was one of my favorite comedy issues. You guys remember, and this is an issue. It made me laugh. It'll still make me laugh when I read it. It's just hilarious. Do you guys remember back when they used to do all the editors from Marvel would go out to Los Angeles, and they would have their powwow out there, and they would do Assistant Editor Month, and there was a sense that during that month, when the cat was away, the mouse would play, and they would do anything. They could tell the craziest stories, not in continuity or not, you know, anything. And there was one that John burned in. It was The Thing, number 7, where he fights this guy. I can't even remember the guy's name, but he was like some Swedish dude or something, or Swiss dude. He had a strong accent, and he had like shoes that made him like super kicking shoes. And he gave the Thing the fight of his life, and the Thing at the end was like, I won! I overcame it all, after getting his hell beat out of him. And then you get to the next page, and it's the Thing reading his own book going, what the hell is this? And he storms into the office, and he beats the shit out of John Byrne for telling this story. And you have John Byrne drawing himself, and all the editors going, you know, I had nothing to do with it, and all this stuff. It was hilarious. It was one of my favorite moments, definitely, and, you know, ever. Anybody else remember that one?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was just thinking of another Assistant Editor's Month issue, because it just showed up on Comixology this week. Snowblind, issue number 6 of Alpha Flight.
Yes.
And I saw it come
up. A joke
on
everybody who paid money for it.
I saw it come up on Comixology and thought, you know, when's the first time that someone complains that the brightness got screwed up on their iPad because of this issue that has, only artwork on about a third of the pages?
You might as well just read a blank Word document.
Well, it has words.
It has word balloons and sound effects, but no pictures. Yeah.
But no pictures. Yeah. Assistant Editor's Month was awesome.
What was it? It was Snowbird fighting a polar bear in a snowstorm.
Yep. Awesome. What else? What else has made you guys laugh? Single issues.
Well, I don't have a single issue, but it's a single series that both know me and Keith have favorite moments from. And it's not... Most people wouldn't consider it a comedy, but I would. Transmetropolitan, Warren Ellis. Man, some sick, weird stuff going on. Oh, very, 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 very dark. But it doesn't have a consistent story arc. sure, you know, he's trying to get at the president, but he takes 80 issues to get there, and not a lot happens. He gets distracted a lot and gets drunk and wanders down alleyways and tortures his cat and his assistants, and that's the book.
Almost like your life, only without the assistants.
Yeah.
Speaking, well, Chrissy, you just said the word cat. I always thought one of the things that made Strangers in Paradise brilliant was it had that feeling of humor related to real life, that real life sense of humor to it that really carried it.
Slightly exaggerated, but yes. I meant the book was slightly exaggerated life.
Well, of course,
which,
it's
which is what made it funny.
Yeah, exactly. Slacker.
Slacker.
Eight Ball. What else we got?
You're
talking about Slacker, Hate.
Hate, yeah. Hate, Peter Begg, funny. I mean, I love Hate, and I love Naughty Bits. Like, those are two books that I absolutely, you know, must have in my collection.
Exactly. What are some favorite funny issues? You got any there, Brett?
Well, I think that, you know, and it's in relation to my favorite moment. I don't remember the exact issue, but to me, the funniest moment in all of comics is in Johnny the Homicidal Maniac. Somebody put shit in my pants. I read that. I keeled over laughing. I don't remember which issue it's in. Frankly, it doesn't matter.
Number one. I think it's actually.
I think it is number one. Yeah,
and it was in a Happy Noodle Boy skit, wasn't it?
Was it?
I believe it was Happy Noodle Boy one page.
No, I think it was one of the semi-autobiographical stories that he stuck in there. It was great stuff in that book, though.
Do you remember this was really? Doug Slack did this one page a strip one time in the middle of it was like issue 3 or something like that of Slacker, and it became the only thing anybody ever wanted to talk to him about. And it was based on a real life thing that happened where he was at work, and the guy who was at working with said to him, who would win in a fight, a rooster or a monkey? And he goes, I think it'd have to be a monkey. He goes, well, what if the rooster was you know, really, really strong? I have to still think it'd be a monkey. What if the rooster was like a robot rooster with machine guns and superpowers and could fly and shoot laser beams from his eyes? He goes, well, then I'd have to think of the rooster. He just looks at him and goes, seriously, that's what I think too. And it's just, that's it. It ends. And it's just like...
Strangely, that joke was ripped off last month. I forgot totally it was from Slacker. And they told it again in Bear Apocalypse last month.
Really?
Yes.
Well, maybe it was Doug Slack. You never know.
Such a like comic store conversation to have.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly it. That's what makes it great. You know? Hey, you know, say what you will about, I don't like a lot of his comic book works, but I'll tell you what, I can still read the Jay and Silent Bob miniseries of the Clerks one-shots that he came out from Oni Press all those years ago, and damn, that made me laugh. Jingle Bells made me laugh. Talk about Oni Press back in the day. But Kevin Smith actually made me laugh in those because it was like the book. It was like the movies when I enjoyed them.
Well, he's making an animated film, so it should be interesting to see if he can pull that off again.
Well, that leads to an interesting question then. What?
Yeah. The interesting question is, I thought this hockey movie was his last movie before he retires.
No, he's announced Clerks 3 as well.
I told you at the time, you're like, this is his last movie. I'm like, he's not going away. He thought he'd fall in love with podcasting and that's all he was going to do.
I'm not arguing he's not a whore. I just thought he found a different way to whore himself out.
No, of course he's going to make movies. Guy like that needs to feed his ego. But still, those Clerks stuff. I can't wait for Clerks 3. I love Clerks 2.
I fell asleep in the theater in Clerks 2.
Oh, you should watch it again.
Ever happened. I couldn't even make it 15 minutes trying to watch it again.
Because you never got to the musical number, you're okay.
Just the ridiculousness of a multimillionaire talking to me about the average Clerks experience.
Wait. That means that you never heard, A, the argument between the guy about what's better, the Lord of the Rings?
I made it to the end of the movie, except for sleeping through about 15 minutes in the middle of it.
Okay. And then you also saw the bit where the sex with the donkey? Like, come on, that's hilarious.
No, porch monkey for life.
That is great too. He's taking it back. Hey, say what you will about the Clerks characters. Randall's okay. Funny. It's about the Jeff Anderson delivery. All right, we're way off on a tangent here.
We are. Normal Man. Normal Man.
Oh, Normal Man, yeah.
You guys know that book?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's a complete collection. It would make no sense to anyone reading it now, unless you know the comics of the very specific time it came out, because every book was meant to be a parody of a huge book at the time it came out. So one of them's a Cerebus thing, one of them's a Swamp Thing, one of them's Watchmen. It's all meant to be parody of very specific forms from like the mid-80s.
Well, you know, my Boris the Bear, one of my mm-hmm. favorite characters. I mean, there was a lot of parody in there, and of course, we can't forget our favorite video game / animated series / comic book character, Earthworm Jim, of course.
Yeah, the only reason I didn't bring him up earlier is because I think of him as being a comic book character last. But he's still. Speaking of Cerebus, though, that first volume, when it is a pure parody of Conan, freaking hilarious.
There's a lot of humor, and Cerebus up to about issue 100.
Yeah.
Even through Church and State, like there's my favorite line in the whole series when I supported his Kickstarter, Dave Sims' Kickstarter, and you could put on, he was signing stuff as part of the perks or whatever of the Kickstarter, and you could personalize it. You could have him put on a specific message. So I had him put on my favorite line in the entire series. During Church and State, someone gives him a baby to. And he takes the baby and pitches it into the crowd and says, "One less mouth to feed is one less mouth to feed." So that's what my Cerebus perks say.
That was awesome. Yes, that was hilarious. Oh yeah, that's a character running around dressed like Batman and Captain America and stuff like that, parodying that.
He almost got sued for Wolveroach.
Wolveroach.
He did get a cease and desist for Wolveroach.
That's awesome. Yes. So what else?
These books don't age well, do they? Because I'm thinking Brett had this one was one of his favorite, Four for a Dollar, X Thieves, one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
but it doesn't play particularly well today. The Adolescent Black Belt Hamsters is unreadable today. I went back and tried.
Well, I would disagree with Clint the Hamster Triumphant, but
this was parodying. The other ones. They were parodying memes and tropes of the day that I mean, Ambush Book specifically. Ambush Book totally doesn't work unless early 1980s DC continuity. there's lots of that stuff that only kind of works in context. She-Hulk still works though. John Byrne's She-Hulk.
John Byrne's She-Hulk does, but
John
say,
Byrne's She-Hulk, yeah.
But Dan Slott
doesn't. Slott's no, and Gerber's doesn't actually either.
But let's face it, Byrne's humor was 5 years out of date when it was new.
That's true. That makes it timeless.
Yeah, that's right. Because it's already coming back around again by the time he's writing or it gets published.
It's already soupy sales jokes.
I want to go back to the Justice League with the DeMatteis and Giffen. The cover, what is the cover where everybody's looking at the camera and somebody's giving somebody rabbit ears and the Flash is staring down the shirt of one of the.
It's issue one, isn't it?
Well, is it issue one?
The pose cover was the cover of issue one when it was called Justice League. It's also the cover of Justice League Europe number one. The Justice League Antarctica issue that I mentioned also has that cover. Issue 24, when they split it into two teams, has that cover.
The greatest because there was Wally West, the Flash, and who was it? Whose chest was looking down?
Power Girl,
Fire, or
Power Girl. The two of them were on the same team. Okay. Yeah, they were on the same team.
I think it was Power. He's trying to look at the camera, but you can see him. It's like he's sneaking a peek, and he's just been caught sneaking a peek. And it's hilarious because, if that was you and you were Wally West in that situation, you'd be doing the exact same thing. And it was the art was awesome by Kevin Maguire. It was just one of the greatest covers in history.
Well, in the Antarctica cover, the annual cover, was that pose, but everyone was pointed away from the camera, so away from the reader. Everyone had their back to the interviewer.
Awesome.
Well, what right now is working as far as humor books? You know, I know what I'm liking of the past 6 months or so. Cowboy was amazing, and it was cute, it was funny, it was accessible. It was one of my favorite books last year. Tiger Lawyer, of course. Mm-hmm. Love. Those one pagers in Hell Yeah are awesome. The Boys just wrapped up its 5-year run. Again, like a self-referential superhero thing. I spoke about it in Marvel Now. Thunderbolts, making me laugh. Digging that book.
Chris is trying to.
Chris is laughing right now.
Bust over there.
Christopher?
I hate that. It's not even supposed to be funny.
I don't know. Keith, is it supposed to be funny?
I think it's building. There's a long tradition of Thunderbolts being a comedy book, isn't it?
Well, there definitely was some humor to Thunderbolts. I wish this was a visual podcast. I swear to God, because you guys cannot see the amount of
use your words,
pain. It's watching Chris's face contort into different.
No. It's a new direction. I understand that. It's just the whole Thunderbolts thing just makes me so incredibly mad that it's this joke of a book. And I'm not 100% sure it's supposed to be fun. It's just... there is so much wrong with that book.
Uh-oh, well...
It's just so much wrong.
Keith, I love it. You know what's making me... One of the reasons I brought up Archer and Armstrong as my series of the year was the perfect mix of adventure and humor and drama. I mean, it definitely makes me laugh out loud sometimes. Now, I think there's a couple times where Van Lace, looking like he's trying a little too hard to throw the humor in there where it doesn't need to be. So he needs to be careful of that. But, I mean, that's definitely a funny book. And Archer and Armstrong has historically been a funny book. Man, speaking of those funny book comedy duos, Quantum and Woody. Damn, that was some funny book.
That
was one of my favorites. That was hilarious.
Yes, one of my favorite new comic books of all time.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, just because it came up. Talking about teams.
I thought that Grim Leaper had some good funny moments in the early going. That's a new book that I liked.
And, if John Hughes could come back from the dead and make that into a movie, I'd be totally happy.
That would be awesome. And another book, and I know it's going to sound completely insane, but I read the second issue for my article, and God damn, My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. The book is funny.
I believe it is.
Yeah, next year we're sending Brett to the Brony the Brony panel at the Comic-Con.
The BronyCon.
Yes, the BronyCon.
Brony. I can't wait to see who he dresses up as. I don't know. What's making you laugh right now, Keith?
Didn't you say that already? He said that already.
Did he?
Still Tiger Lawyer. I read an issue. I reread an issue while you guys were talking.
Yeah, this is your topic, actually, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I think Tiger it's Lawyer. Really Chris that has
also.
Yes. Okay.
Specifically,
I think the funniest comic book I've read in a while.
Hilarious.
Little Gotham, I thought was hilarious.
Oh, those are great. Yeah,
They are. Yeah, that's a good
and
one.
As far as digital only, I think 11 page issues are going to be a huge boon to comedy comic books.
I could see that. Yeah.
To get a short dose like in and out. Adventure doesn't always work that well in a shorter format. I think comedy books might take over this particular area of the market.
I can see that for sure. Though I have to say, the it came out last week, I think, I don't know. I read it last week, so I assume it came out last week. Injustice number one from the creators of Mortal Kombat. Basically, it's a digital book DC's put out that's where Superman is like a dictator who rules the entire planet, and Batman leads forces to. Oh, it's wicked. It was tremendous.
That's the video game tie-in, is it?
Is it? Is it a tie-in to the video game? I'm not even sure. I just know that from those creators, and it was awesome. Especially good for a guy like me who loves it, who still likes to think that DC was taking place 3 or 4 years ago, because this is. At least that's where it takes off from. So yeah, I don't know. Anything else that's funny right now?
I thought Mondo was super funny.
Mondo was funny, for sure.
And Chu, how do we forget Chu and Secret Agent Boyo? You know,
how the hell did that happen?
Yeah,
hello,
exactly.
Chu.
Technically, documentary, isn't it?
We're forgetting a lot of stuff. I mean, we're talking about funniest stuff. Nobody ever brought up the preach at a character called Arsface.
Oh, Arsface!
Arsface was awesome.
I this is a great Twitter topic though. Like, who is everybody else's favorite? Favorite funny characters.
That Marvel Knights run of Punisher was fabulous too.
And I enjoy it so much when Joker actually lands a joke.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. I don't think it's going to happen with the new Joker in the new 52, but over the years, every once in a while, he actually gets a funny joke in there. Yeah. And it's such a surprise because he tells somebody purposely clunky joke. That every once in a while he'll get that funny one, and then I'll just die.
Wasn't it Arkham Asylum that had the "I've been trying to call you since yesterday" joke?
Yes. And even the dumb joke in the Killing Joke was relevant and a little bit funny.
So what else? I mean, Brett, you had another thing you wanted to bring up?
I got two more questions for us.
I got a couple. So, yeah, I got something else to bring up on this, too, so go ahead.
So I got the number one question that I have is, what doesn't work? And then after that, I'll question who your favorite comedy writer is.
Well, I got three words for what doesn't work in comedy writing. Matt effing Fraction.
Well, I mean, he was actually who I was going to go. I wasn't going to go. But any of that self-aware bullshit, I hate that. I wasn't going to drop that name specifically, but yeah, anytime that people are self-aware and trying to and point and go, we're cool because we know we're a comic book, and we're you know, which is funny because I brought up John Byrne doing it, but it was different. You know, I can't explain how it's different. It just was.
You know, I'd actually go so far as to say Bongo Comics. For the most part, it doesn't work for me. And in a lot of cases, it's the stuff where you are taking the properties and you're trying so hard to take something that already is funny and maintain the same level of humor, and you just pretty much can't do it. And
I question the already is funny. I've seen The Simpsons in the last 10 years.
No. I mean, The Simpsons hasn't been funny in you know, a decade easily, but that's the problem.
Look at the movie props.
Those Family Guy comics were painful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, see, that's a perfect example.
Well, it's also hasn't been funny in years.
Yeah, but...
I still love Family Guy, but all of the humor is based on... It's all based in a very specific type of humor and like the cutaways and stuff that totally don't work in this medium.
Anytime... like I said, I brought up with Dude Daredevil, or Blue Devil, sorry, and I've seen it many times. Yeah, anytime that somebody says to somebody, this is funny, and they go, oh, God, we got to be funny, it usually stops being funny. Because you can't try it. You can't force humor.
Actually, I can't actually think of a property book other than My Little Pony, which isn't funny to begin with. A property book that's meant to be funny, a humorous property that translates into comic books directly.
Actually, I will say that that especially the Carl Barks and the Don Rosa, the Donald Duck and the Uncle Scrooge.
Oh,
they,
yeah.
They're property
Sorry,
books that work very well.
Sorry, forgot about Carl Barks.
Yeah, the Barks, Uncle role. Scrooge. Oh, so freaking brilliant that stuff was, yeah. Yeah, no question. You know, that's the thing, though. I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, a lot of the comic books I was reading before the superhero was Richie Rich, Dennis the Menace, Archie, obviously. Other than Archie, do any of these still exist even? I mean, these are things that really to help get me in there.
I think they still exist, just not in the same in the same format. I think they might exist.
Richie Rich still exist?
Richie Rich, as well as a whole lot of those characters, just got incorporated into DreamWorks, so we can expect that machine to take over for them real quick.
But we haven't. Do they still publish a book? Casper, does Casper have a monthly book?
They do not have a monthly book at this time, but I would expect a huge push later this year. They only got absorbed into DreamWorks about 2 months ago, so it's still early on.
Well, I think much like Archie, I think that those books as a gateway to people reading comic books were important. The same thing, I think when you talk about the strips, I mean, having the strips in the comic books, in the newspapers, but also just the fact the strips were collected, like, you get collected editions of Garfield. I mean, Garfield stopped being funny a long time ago, but the first three, collected editions of Garfield are hilarious. The old Peanuts from the day and age. I mean, these were, in some ways, you could almost call these the first trade paperbacks before comic books were doing them, you know? And you would get these, and I would read these, and it was, like a giant-sized trade paperback. Mad Magazine, is another one. I mean, yeah, you say it's a magazine, but let's face it, it's drawings. It's a comic book. It's just an oversized magazine format comic book. And all of these things were important to me getting into comic books, in the later years. So I don't know. Would anybody else think about some of their favorite strips, Mad Magazines, anything else that kind of humor and comic book related, but not directly the books?
I always prefer Cracked, actually.
Cracked was good. Yeah, that was Marvel's. That was Marvel's imprint.
Really?
Marvel. Marvel. I believe Marvel published Cracked.
I think they published it late. I don't think they published it off the bat, but I think they published a second series of it. Okay. But I could be wrong on that. But
I thought Larry Hama was actually the editor for that.
So you're not thinking of Crazy.
Oh, maybe I'm getting them confused. Mm-hmm. I could very well be getting them confused. Yeah.
Not Brand Eck.
Mm-hmm.
That was another.
All of Fred Hembeck's stuff. his stuff is mostly in strip form.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those Marvel Age middle spreads that he did were awesome. Marvel Age, if you're under 30, was this? It was a 25-cent or 35-cent comic that came out monthly that gave you interviews and behind-the-scenes stuff. It was like a printed blog, essentially, of what was coming up in Marvel.
Yeah.
And Fred Hembeck did a 2-page spread in the middle of one that was in the middle of every issue that was always tied into the theme of that issue. And always Marvel jokes.
God, how did we survive living on that without an internet?
We have fewer spoilers.
Yeah.
You know, in some ways, I wish we could go back to that innocence.
I want my news now.
I would love to go back to it being 3 months before anyone knew that someone had a problem with the storyline.
Yeah.
Something to be said for that. So, how about it, everybody? Again, strips, comic books, writers. I mean, for me, I don't know. Over the years, I think Peter David has given me more laugh out loud moments than any other writer. And not always. Sometimes it falls flat, but I think more than any other guy. Peter David has given me those. I don't like it when he tries to write a comedy book, but when he fits in that real world humor to it. And I'll never forget the moment where Hulk's sitting at a table, and all of a sudden you cut to him, the panel cuts to him, and he has a green fin on his head, and he's like, "Come on, this is just the Hulk with a green fin on his head." And it was like, because he was feuding with Eric Larson at the time. That was funny. On the other hand, when he was doing what's it called again? The pinking the brain stuff, and he was trying too hard to be funny and winking at us. That got annoying. So it's all a balance. But yeah, I don't think anybody's ever made me laugh more than Peter David over the years.
I'm gonna give that to Keith Giffen.
Yeah, Keith Giffen's up there for sure.
All the Justice League stuff, and there was a lot of humor in the Legion of Superheroes 5 years later stuff. It was such a dark book, but he had a lot of humor in there too.
I'm going to go with Carl Barks just because, I love that.
Is he brilliant?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Just to pick somebody that's a little bit more relevant at Marvel these days, Dan Slott, I think he's very funny. I've enjoyed several.
I'd point to his She-Hulk run as one of those.
I loved.
His thin run was actually funny. I hate to admit it. His thin run was Did he bring us Great Lakes Avengers as well? Is that him?
No,
I think he did.
They did show up in the thing a few
times. Yeah, no. I think he did a story of them. But
he did the Manny or something. No, John Byrne created the Great Lakes Avengers.
Which deserves praise for creating the Great Lakes Avengers. Yeah.
They should give him the Fantastic Four for a little bit, just so he's so he has a run on everything Byrne did at Marvel.
he needs to check Namor and Fantastic Four off his card.
And West Coast Avengers.
They've got 18 bloody Avengers teams right now, and we can't have a Wackos. Come on.
That's true. All right, guys, I think, are we ready to wrap it up? Any final thoughts on humor in comics? I think when we start talking this, I think we could keep talking it. I don't think any of us realized how much humor over the years we've appreciated until we started talking about it.
Yeah, there probably is a lot more stuff that I just don't think of on a regular basis, and things that, it's just like, now again, I get thank you all for increasing my reading pile by another 1,000 comics.
It happens every time. You know what? I'm just gonna say this: we'll mention our Twitter handles at the end, and you can give us tweet out your favorite. But if you wanted to send something in email form, you can reach us at comics@wetalkpodcast.com. That's comics@wetalkpodcast.com. Now, as we wrap this subject up, we're going to take care of a little house cleaning from a couple of older issues that we had. We had a couple of contests of stuff we were giving away prizes from, so I'm going to get Keith and Brett to announce the winners for those.
Ours is, the one I'm doing is the We Talk Comics Survey, and we'll be giving a digital trade of Peter Panzerfaust through Comixology, sponsored by me, to I am Finney 1021. So congratulations! Thanks for filling out the survey, and we'll be using that info to make this podcast even better than it is now.
Impossible.
And Brett.
And I'm going to announce the winner for the Comics Tribe super duper awesome prize pack. We'll sort out with them. Once we get all the information, when you're going to receive it. But the winner for that is David Meyer. Congratulations to you.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for entering. And what we're going to do now is going to move on to our very world-famous reviews section. We don't call it just reviews because we're We Talk Comics, part of the We Talk Podcast family. So, of course, we do Weviews because Keith?
Here I come to save the day.
We are saving you from bad comics.
Damn straight. I think there might be a bad one to save from this week, but some good stuff too. Interesting week. Nice mix. Keith, why don't you open up? What do you want to talk about?
There's some books this week that I could talk about longer than others. Let's talk about what from the Twitters is the number one book of the week, Young Avengers. That is the one that is on everyone's lips this week. I am not familiar with these characters. This is Kieran Gillen with art by Jamie McKelvey and Mike Morton. This is a non-Avengers Avengers book. I have no idea how this actually relates to the Avengers in any way. Not very familiar with these characters, but I think it's a good introductory to who these people are, and not so much how they fit together, but who they are going forward. You don't need to know anything of where they've been, from my perspective. The only one I could have used a bit more information on was Loki. Wasn't clear on why he is who he is in this book. But it's an interesting array of characters, and it's a setup issue, but it spends quite a bit of time telling you who they are. I liked it. I don't know if I like it enough to come back for a second issue. I think I may see how much of this issue I remember when number two comes up.
Chris, what did you think?
I am familiar with these characters. I'm a huge Young Avengers fan from their last incarnation before every crossover in the world ran them over and stuffed them into Avengers Academy or whatever the hell that book was called month to month. This incarnation I found interesting, actually. I thought it was a very good comic book. However, nothing happens. There's a lot of talking. It's a setup issue with not a lot of setup. They set up the characters, but they don't set up any sort of story whatsoever. I'm wondering what happened to some of the missing members of the Young Avengers from the last incarnation. I lost track of them, unfortunately. And the one truly new character to the Young Avengers, Loki, I kind of was also wondering what the hell is going on here. I kind of wish they had more story to sort of draw me in. Give me a Kang or something to go, okay, well, I don't know what's going on with the heroes, but man, Kang's going to kick their ass. I needed a little bit more. I'm continuing on because I do like these characters, but if I was to pick up this issue cold, I would have just put it down right now. I don't know who these kids are. I don't care.
I'll let Brett have the final say on this because he probably is maybe he's a counterpoint to me. I'm not familiar with these characters. I don't understand how Keith came away knowing anything about any of them. Like, there's so many references to things that I was supposed to know about that I had no clue that I got so bored trying to figure that out. I mean, the art's awful. I mean, there's not a single background in the entire book. It's very generic. Just terrible, terrible looking book. But so confusing. I mean, there's a character in the opening. She sleeps with Marvel Boy. I find out that Marvel Boy was Marvel Boy and was something else and was kicked off the Earth for some reason. And then she's running around and apparently some inner thing, she says she has no powers, but being a superhero is fun. I don't know who she is. I don't know her background. I don't know. Like, again, if this is in the middle of a series, it's bad because it doesn't give any background. When this is a number one, it's bad. Worse because it doesn't give around. When this is a number one of the supposed Marvel Now, what the frick is the point? This is not good.
You know, I haven't read as many Young Avengers as Chris. I was reading it when I was reading, going through all of Marvel. It was one of the standout series that I noted from my 2004, 5, 6 reading and stuff like that. I don't know that much about the characters, so there were characters that I didn't know and there were things that, you know, I wasn't sure of. But the one thing that I definitely noted as I was reading this book is I was just thinking, wow, Mo is going to hate this. Because I could see that it was everything that you would typically go off about on a Marvel book, you know, having lots of references to what had come before. I do happen to like the Young Avengers. I like this book so far. Yeah, I'm definitely there for the first story arc. Whether I know what's going on right now, doesn't matter. I will be there for the first story arc.
So basically what you're saying is, Brett, is you're going to read the first story arc based on goodwill of the characters, which is what I'm getting from Chris, too. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's more goodwill from what the Avengers, Young Avengers were and the quality they were than really so much that this wowed you.
Yeah, this didn't wow me right away, but you know, I will reserve the right to let it wow me.
I don't know, Ma. I think I disagree with a couple of your points. I mean, one of the things about this book, actually, is that I like that you said there weren't any backgrounds. One of the things I liked a lot was that there was a recurring element in the backgrounds of the superhero posters in the characters' rooms. That sense of that, you know, that they're trying to, you know, copy their idols kind of thing. Because, yeah, there is that element of, you know, Captain America poster in one room and Dazzler in another.
I am flipping through it right now. I have a digital copy, and I'm looking for that. And you're right, there's a Captain America poster in the background. That is they've been in this particular room now for three pages, and that is the only thing that's in the background. other than a lampshade.
So yeah, it's worth being said, four of the characters never leave their bedrooms in this comic book.
Yeah.
That's my point. There's not a lot going on.
Seriously, they don't.
Four of the six characters never make it out of the house.
So it's like the Hobbit.
So it's Young Avengers.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's Young Avengers in Love, right? That was the name of the book?
Yeah, it's Young Avengers in Love. Nothing. Not much happens. Young Avengers in Love. No backgrounds.
Let's go on to the next book.
Let's move on, please.
Just looking at it again.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to figure out who these people...
You're just going to drag the podcast down to it.
Didn't relate to them. All right, well, let me do a book here since we brought this up. What the hell? Let's go Deadpool. Let's do the Deadpool Moby Dick. This was a book that I went into going, I'm going to hate this. I know I'm going to hate this. I didn't like Deadpool's miniseries relaunch or his series relaunch. I didn't like the Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, number one. I'm actually going to go back and read that now because this is actually related to that. And since I enjoyed this so much, and it references that, it made me realize that they were actually doing something interesting. I think this is actually a very clever book, and I think Cullen Bunn does a nice job writing it. And it's an interesting take, an interesting concept that I didn't see coming. So something fresh.
Okay. Yeah, it's Deadpool. I will give it this. The first line of this book, I laughed out loud. We're going to need a bigger boat. I found that very, very funny.
That was my least favorite part of the whole book because it's a joke that's been made 100 billion times.
It just took me by surprise this time for some reason. After that, I dozed off. I was trying to figure out where this fits in the Marvel Universe. Is it indeed a continuation?
It never was.
Yes, is it indeed a continuation of Marvel Deadpool versus Marvel, or Marvel
Deadpool kills
the Marvel Universe?
It's obvious.
And I was able to answer yes. But on a whole, after I answered that question, I got a case of the who cares. Really, yeah, seeing a pile of dead Spider-Man really doesn't thrill me. So.
Well, it's not about thrilling you. You don't find the idea that basically this is the one character who's discovered that he's a fictional character who's trying to find a way to escape that and die an interesting concept?
Not particularly.
Okay. Brett.
I'm with you, Mo. I thought it was pretty good. I didn't really expect to like it much either. But I don't necessarily care about going back and reading anything for it, but I don't think
you have to. That's one of the
No, exactly. But
they filled you in, Brett.
Yes.
They gave you all the background you needed of what had happened in the issue number one.
Yes, but it is just a miniseries, and it is Deadpool. So how much backstory do you really need with Deadpool?
I'm just saying.
But it's got its moments. I think this is almost one of those cases like Keith mentioned. Where it is very. Self, or where it's breaking down that fourth wall, not quite, but in that way of trying to find the comic creator and the creator of everything. So I thought it was kind of cute and pretty good.
And Keith, what do you think?
I was so on it. There was one spot that kind of derailed my brain for minutes, but three or four pages in. It says 163 years later, 5 days earlier.
Yes, I read that like two or three times. Huh?
And after the nosebleed stops, and I was able to get back into the story. And
it makes sense later, though.
There's some cute stuff. Yeah, it's sort of a time travel book, so none of that stuff never makes any sense. It's okay. I'm not sure. I'm glad that the concept isn't going to stretch very far. The concept that he's a fictional character who's trying to kill off other fictional characters. I'd hope they get a little bit more creative than the couple of fictional characters we see in this first issue. I know it's Tom Sawyer or something is on the cover of the second one.
Right? Yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'll borrow one of you guys. Have one of your copies.
It makes sense though. There's the moment where the Vision, the Pinocchio, when it all makes sense. You're like, ah, that's the inspiration for this character. It's making sense. It's, this is what he's doing is working.
And I'll join back those. In if they do the Marquis de Sade.
Pretty sure Classics Illustrated never covered the Marquis de Sade. No wonder Wortham has all those movies.
That was the Invisibles, Chris.
So, Keith, if you don't mind, you had a book that was sent to you that you forwarded off to us. It was from a gentleman named Mike Hunau and illustrated by Carlos Trigo. And I wonder if you would talk about Crimson Society, number one, an independent book that... I think one of the best parts of this podcast is the fact that people send us these books. We get a chance to see them before anybody else, especially when it's a well-done book.
Yeah, so we got Crimson Society Part 1 of 4, and it is essentially it's a guy who is cursed as a werewolf and goes to get a cure that isn't really a cure. It's a fun book. I kind of enjoyed it. It's wacky. It's crazy violent. It has a time stamp that says 2030, 11 days earlier.
Did it? I didn't even notice that.
It doesn't say so many years later. This is a bit slicker than Deadpool. It's a neat concept. I'd really like to read another issue of this and see where he's going. He's playing with some mix of supernatural stuff and high tech, the ultra violence, very kind of a cartoony art style to it. It's cliche, but it's an indie art style. It's a type of art that I've seen on quite a few of the small press stuff that's been sent to us of late.
I found this very charming book. I really enjoyed Carlos Triga's art. And you know, when I was talking about how I would love to see more variety in the art, I was going, this is the exact type of guy that you never see really at one of the big two as much as you should, this style, just to mix things up and keep it fresh. I really think that the art is really, really well done. I think the storyline here is really, really very interesting, too. I do think that some of the storytelling, just some constructive criticism here, and this is a Kickstarter product that's being funded already. I do think some of the concepts, I had to go back and read it again or a second or third time to really get what was going on. I think so. Just the narrative had a few difficulties. I think the biggest issue I had with the book was I thought the dialogue and the captions was really good, but the character would just talk to himself out of the blue, and I felt that this dialogue was clunky. I think that they need to work on whether or not you really need to do this and have a character talk to himself in a way that's not necessarily all that realistic. I think that's probably the biggest issue with the book. It just felt a little, I don't know. Clunky is the best words I am for it. Things like dialogue like 7 a.m. Whoops. Nobody says that out loud to themselves. Like, or huff, this is it? What a dump. Like, it's just not how people talk, and they certainly don't talk like that out loud to themselves. Or, ugh, you got to be kidding me? It's clunky. And it's the thing that hurts the book the most. That said, I think it has a lot of potential. I love the art. I think it's very charming, and I think it's going to be a really fun four-issue read by the time it's done, and I recommend people check it out for sure. Chris, what do you think?
Cybernetic werewolves, what's not to like? Actually, I did have one question that I wanted to ask you guys. Now, in one panel of this book, we have homeless zombies sitting on the side of the street. Do you think that's some sort of social commentary, or is that actually going to play into the story?
I think it's a little A and a little B.
I don't know the answer to it. It was a pause, and I felt I should say something.
I was waiting for somebody else to say something.
But I found her humorous. I liked it. I don't know if it fits with the rest of the series. To actually bring that back in later. But that's my opinion.
But you like the series?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. What's not to like about what they're talking
Cybernetic
about?
Cybernetic werewolves, you're right.
Why the hell did
I say all those other words? I could have just summed it up. Cybernetic werewolves, buy it.
Yeah, right. No, you got my money in the first two words. Why continue? I'd buy this book.
All right, well.
Ed Monkeys, you got my money twice.
And not only that, but I should mention to everybody, Cybernetic Werewolves, page one.
Yes.
Right. All right, well, you know, Cybernetic Werewolves and all aside. I thought this book started out a little slow for my taste.
Death on page two.
Yes, but...
Then he's eviscerated. There's none of this natural death. It's not like he was poisoned.
I am that desensitized that a death on page two is still slow.
Wait, I just want to pause to clarify that poisoning is not a natural death. I just want to make sure that's 100% clear. Brett.
And I wasn't...
What the hell you want?
I wasn't used to the art style. It wasn't... It didn't thrill me as much as it did Mo. I think by about halfway through the book, everything had picked up enough for me to be happy with it. I think as long as they can avoid, like derivative elements of these characters that they're trying to tell, then it should be a good book and one that I will go through and read. But it's a good start, and I will read the rest of it.
All right, cool. Hey, Chris, how would you feel about talking about, I don't know, The Answer Number One by Dennis Hopeless and Mike Norton? Does that sound cool to you?
That sounds cool to me. The Answer, Dark Horse Comic Books, Dennis Hopeless. Now, last week we asked on the podcast, had anyone ever actually read a book? And the answer was yes, or read a book by Dennis Hopeless. And the answer should have been a yes from all of us. However, none of us ever remembered reading one.
Well, because I only got like 8 pages in before I gave up. It was so bad.
Oh yeah, I've since researched the question, and I've read a whole lot of Dennis Hopeless. I just didn't remember because
none of this stuff has really tickled
my fancy.
X-Men Year One, that's the one I'm referencing.
Yes. Yes, yeah. That's the one you're
referencing. Season one.
Or season one, yeah. Sorry, season one, yeah.
No, I mean, he's been around for a while, and I've read some of his stuff, and it's never really thrilled me. This, I thought, was superior to a lot of books I've read. I like the whole... This book is about puzzles and superheroes and sort of mixes it up a little bit. I found it interesting. I found our main hero had an interesting look, although he didn't remind me for some reason of the Spot of all weird Marvel characters to remind a character of. I did sort of enjoy that. I kind of wish they had incorporated some of the puzzle aspects of... because our main protagonist plays with a puzzle box for most of the first issue. I kind of wish they'd incorporated that into the whole story where there were more puzzles to figure out within the story, and there wasn't. On a whole, I'm reading the second issue, but you know what? If my comic book store doesn't order it, I don't know if I liked it enough to ask for them to reorder it for me.
Keith. Although, I enjoy the story. I like the art, which is kind of a Jerry Ordway-ish style. Kind of an older superhero style. There's probably enough to get me interested in the second issue. My one criticism of the book, though, is that this is a story entirely about puzzles, and there's an element where she's kind of that the lead character is proving herself through puzzles. It's really freaking lazy that there are no actual puzzles in the book.
Yeah, I thought that too.
they spend about six pages making a big deal about how smart she is and how she's figuring out all these puzzles, but you don't, the reader doesn't see any of them. You're just told that she figures them out. You know, even the puzzle box doesn't actually make any sense art-wise what she's done to open this puzzle box. She turns two things and it completely changes its shape in a way that a physical object can't. So, I mean, that would be kind of something that bugged me, is that it just, you're told that she's smart instead of being shown in any way.
Yeah, it'd be like if Batman had to solve the Riddler's riddles, and you just got to the next page and he's like, and here I am where I solved it. It's like, you know, you got to see him go through the process.
Yeah, but she didn't hear the riddle.
You're just told that he solved the riddle without actually hearing the riddle. That's kind of what it's like. I think that's a good point, actually. I hadn't thought of that, but I think that's a very good point. I mean, for me, I really enjoyed it. And the last page left me very intrigued. I want to come back to see. I'm definitely coming back to issue number two to see where this goes, because I'm like, how does that happen? What is the riddle and the answer here? That said, I had a big issue, too. I think the art's very nice. I think if you had this artist, once again, it's Mark Englert. Mike Norton. Sorry, Mark Englert is the colorer. Mike Norton. I think if you had this artist doing somebody else's character designs, it would be great. I think the character designs here are not very good, particularly because the lead character is basically the world's smartest person, who's an underachieving librarian, and here she is. She's 30 years old. She looks 16. They say she's like supposed to be mousy. Instead, she's all hot. She's supposed to have no athleticism. Meanwhile, she's running around in a tight stomach with a little tight stomach in a belly shirt. It kind of hurt the book. That said, it's just one of those things that kind of bugs you, and not really so much a criticism of the quality of the book. It's just something that got to me. Brett, what did you think?
I like the story. I think I'd probably come back for it. The only complaint that I could have of it is that Pinhead didn't come out of the puzzle.
That's yeah, really that was what another I was one. For. I definitely thought of that.
Yeah.
That was definitely from, yeah, no question.
But solid book.
Hey Brett, why don't you give the next review?
All right, well, why don't I just go on to Star Trek Countdown to Darkness, the prologue to the new Star Trek movie. And, I mean, I like the story, and the art is passable to the degree that I knew that the characters were who the characters were, even though they tried, you know, pretty hard to mimic the way the actual people look, which always gets on my nerves. But I'm looking forward to the new Star Trek movie, and this looks like it could be a good way to help keep my interest going. So I kind of liked it.
Okay. Chris, what did you think of it?
Actually, I disagree with you with the art. I couldn't pick Scott Spock out of a lineup in this book. I found the art really substandard for this type of book. Just everything was ugly and I couldn't tell who was who. I guess the writing could have been passable, but by the end I was just sort of glad it was over. For the last movie we had a countdown book as well, and I was told it was excellent, but I didn't want to wreck my anticipation for the movie by reading a comic book first, so I didn't read it, and now I'm sort of glad that I went that way. I'm actually less excited for the movie for having read this book. Keith?
Well, this is written by Mike Johnson, who writes the ongoing, also a writer on Supergirl. And it was... For what it is, it's fine. It's, you know, there's a lot of these movie tie-in books that are bridging, or, you know, they do them for the Avengers movies as well. The Iron Man one just started last week, the bridges to Iron Man 3. So it's fine for that. It's, you know, it won't actually accomplish very much. and it's not going to spoil too much because, you know, it's filling a null space. But talking about comedy books, though, I laughed so hard when I was about half dozen pages in and realized that the digital colorist was aping the crappy CG lens flare that was used in the Star Trek movie in all of the art. I laughed myself silly when I realized that they were messing up the art with all these lens flares. That was fantastic. I'm not interested in reading the rest of this, unless it turns up on Comixology as a free one, which some of the stuff has.
Oh, okay. I really enjoyed the book. I think it's really... It comes back down to the movie for me, and I'd actually like to read the one that Chris referenced, the first Countdown book to the first movie. Because, I mean, I went into that first movie going, oh, God, I'm so skeptical. I was sure this was not going to be something I was going to like. I was so skeptical. And I walked away going, God, I really, really enjoyed that. And I became a big fan of the movie. And I think this to me, I like the art when it represents the real characters in it. I mean, to me, that looks totally like Spock. I mean, not the Spock that is Leonard Nimoy. Spock in the new movie is exactly what he looks like. Because he has a very blank look to him. And that's the Spock that they're going for. And to me, it worked. I don't know. I think it's just because I like the movie and I like the property and I like the potential. And I think that the characterizations are all dead on to what the characterizations in the movies were. And I don't read the ongoing series, but I like this quite a bit. I'm definitely going to be continuing to read it, and it'll be a great way for me to look forward to watching the movie. I don't see a lot of movies, but I'm going to see that. The trailer was awesome. All right, Keith, let's do. Is this our last book?
It is.
We have one left. Oh, we have got Uncanny X-Force. This is a bit of a muddle. This is Sam Humphries, Ron Garney. It is a cobbled together team for sure. We've got a team that is made up of Storm, Puck, Psylocke, Spiral, and I can't even remember the name of the last character because it's not a character as familiar.
Bishop.
Bishop turns out Phantom X is the extra character that I don't know. Lady Phantom X, I guess, is the female clone.
I thought her name was Cluster.
Yeah, that's her name, and then there's another one.
Fair enough. If Phantom X is the guy, and is it Cluster is the name of the one? Okay.
Yeah.
Cluster, yeah.
And then there's the third twin.
Which reminded me, that's what I thought of this movie, or this book, Cluster.
It's apt. Ah, yes, there it is. My Dear Cluster. They get introduced right at the very tail end.
Yeah. There's another word I actually would throw on at the end, too, to Cluster, but I won't use it on this podcast. We try and keep it PG, not PG-13 or R.
There was a question on the Twitters from our pal at Alpha Comics who was quizzing Canadians on whether a Canadian would actually refer to himself as an NPR listener. I'm gonna say no. The question was posed in the context of have you heard of NPR? That's not the context it's in the book. It's none of these characters really grab me. I won't be back just because it is such a mess of the first issue. As far as, you know, there's a couple of good moments. There's some good relationships between a couple of characters, but I can't figure out. It could be six or eight issues before there's a logical reason why all of these characters end up in the same place.
Chris,
everyone within the sound of my voice needs to buy this book. Why? Puck.
It's a cluster puck. That's what Mo was going for.
If this book is a success, a mild success, it stands a chance that Puck will get his own series. This is something I need. Maybe give him a monkey sidekick.
Alpha Flight ran for 10 years, and Puck didn't get his own book. You think this is where it's all going to turn around for Puck?
Oh, like if this book is canceled at issue 3, he's going to get his a regular series. No, this book needs to be a hit. I need more Puck. Okay. I'm buying issue 2. That's it.
Chris, you can't judge the
quality
of a book
by its cover.
Based on their love for... You know what? If this was the Puck that was in the Alpha Flight that I loved, I would agree. Buy this book. Let's hope he gets his own. But when this is a puck that is nothing like the puck that I liked. Just a little guy who, I don't know, a little perverted. I'm trying not to use the word dwarf, but that's what he referred to himself as.
All right, all right, okay. I'm sorry. I'm taking your criticisms. I will give you a serious review of the book.
Okay.
If you loved it, buy this book.
All right. This book was awful.
Best book this week.
This was a terrible book. This was terrible. The writing in this is so frickin' bad. What I love is all I heard about going into this was, Storm's got a mohawk again. Storm's got a mohawk again. Storm, nobody ever...
Another cool thing. Another reason this book needs to be a hit.
Well, she's not better. Or, to me, she's not better or worse with the mohawk. I could care less. But everybody
so much better with the mohawk.
No, she's not. Who cares?
I do.
Yeah, okay, you care. I don't care. Your review's over, Chris. You had your chance. This book sucks. Seriously, how many times in this book did they bleep out a character using profanity with a dark black line?
Five.
Such.
What, I went back and counted.
It's awful.
Because it bugged me.
It's so weak. It's so lame. It's so phony. It's terrible. It's a terrible book.
All right. Well, I guess that leaves it down to me. This book is a complete and utter disaster. From moment one to the last page of the book, there is almost nothing that regards a comprehensible storyline to this. That being said, I enjoyed it. I have no idea how I managed to do it, but I really wound up kind of liking
the book.
Don't you
wish somebody somewhere would have referenced the mohawk, though? If that was all anybody's going to be talking about, the Twitter?
Okay, I'm gonna stop you there, Mo. The gigantic backstory of the mohawk came out this week.
Oh,
there is no long.
Cares.
It's not part of
think,
it. It's in another
think
book that came out this week.
But at least you think somebody like Puck would have gone, oh, mohawk again, huh?
You know, honestly, I like Psylocke in this book, and
she's
really?
I love her.
I get in
she's
trouble
awful.
For not noticing
she's the one
hair,
who's, she's the one responsible for most of those black lines that were so
well, yeah.
terrible.
Yeah, entirely. I mean, but it's not her fault that there's black lines in the book, you know, by that token. But I don't know. At the end of it, it's a complete mess. If you don't want to read a mess, then don't read this book. But I kind of liked it, so there you go.
There you go.
Take it as you will.
All right. We're comics at WeTalkPodcast.com. Once again, if you want to email us questions, thoughts, opinions, anything, we'll read your stuff on the air. You know, nobody ever asks us to. But if you ask us to, if you put that in there, maybe we would. What the hell? Other than that, talk at Twitter and also check out the Comic Podcast Network. And this whole weekend, I will be live in Arizona, in Phoenix, Arizona, attending the Royal Rumble, watching CM Punk defend against The Rock. I'm going to have lots of updates from the fan fest to be down there. I'm not sure when this is going up, but I'm sure it'll be going up on the weekend, so you can check back. There'll be stuff from the fan fest, so talking the Montreal Screwjob panel, the WCW panel, the DX panel, and of course the Rumble itself, as well as all the hobnobbing I'll be doing with the performers backstage with my backstage passes. It's going to be awesome. And other than that, I'm personally OUT. Who else wants to do a plug?
Well, I'll go. That sounds great, Mo. I heard your reference that you were going to the Royal Rumble. That's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be something off the bucket list. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's congratulations on that. That seems like you'll have a ball. Well, I wanna plug myself because I am a shameless self promoter. check out my 900 Things blog, which is on the WeTalkPodcast.com website, and a special shout out to Ashley Feliciano, who is presently one of the front runners on American Idol. She is the daughter of Red 10 artist Cesar Feliciano. So all the best for her. Someone will keep you posted on American Idol. I hear there's a fan base for it. And you can follow me on Twitter, CubReporterK.
Go Ashley.
It's really too bad we can't vote up here in Canada. I'm Chris at Chris_WeTalk. I got nothing to plug, so Brett.
Well, I'm Brett _WeTalk. That's Brett. You know, I I wish her all the best, though there's no way in hell you'll ever get me to watch that program. I would actually just vote.
But if you go on, if you go on YouTube or you search on Google, you can watch the just her audition section, which Caesar is in. Caesar and his wonderful family.
Oh, excellent. Nice, well, that's something good. And other than that, I won't be in Phoenix, Arizona over the weekend, so I'm out as well.
You guys are going to do the promotion for this show. We'll look forward to seeing what comes with it. Chris, we're going to go out then, OUT officially, with your comic book attraction, Chris's comic book attractions. What do you got in tap this week?
Well, I took a bullet. I really did. I watched the 1978 Doctor Strange telefilm.
Ooh.
I've still only made it halfway through, so you're a better man than I.
I've made it halfway through if it's 20 minutes long.
No, it is not.
Nope.
Well, that's perfect. Handle. All right. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you guys soon.
If you're wondering what that was, it was the main theme to tonight's comic book attractions, the section of the show where I remind you of films, both good and bad, based on comic books that are worthy of being remembered. This week's feature from 1978, the telefilm of Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange, of course, being a creation of Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. This film was basically prompted by the success of The Incredible Hulk, which saw Marvel putting a whole bunch of properties into Hollywood's mill. It's hard to believe now, now that we have all sorts of comic book properties coming to both television and movies, that at one time this was a rare event. Nobody really thought it could sell, and it was a stretch, and I think just getting a film of any sort made was a success. However, a lot of these properties were dreadfully embarrassing. And this is unfortunately one. Doctor Strange in this, well, there's no polite way of saying this. He's rocking a killer, killer afro, as only a white man can wear it. There's not much else to be said. There's no car accident that prompts Doctor Strange to venture seeking out the Ancient One. No, he's basically thrown into the role of Sorcerer Supreme with no training whatsoever. Although we are treated to a killer costume, purple and silver has never rocked harder. But that costume does not appear until the last 10 minutes or so. Not to mention, the synthesizer score we heard at the beginning of the segment is bad no matter what era it was from. Here's a short clip of the film, just to emphasize the type of film we're talking about.
Will I be called upon to do?
Become more than a man. And renounce such earthly pleasures as are given to men who are only mortal. The pleasure of ignorance, or offspring, or an easy death.
I don't understand.
Okay, that's enough of that. We got a lot of characters from the actual comic book series, even if they're only represented by name only. Of course, we have Doctor Strange, Dr. Stephen Strange. They don't change any names. We've got Morgan Le Fay, who's a villain in the Marvel Universe, as well as being a classical reference. We've got the Ancient One, who is also referred to strangely as Lemire, which is notably an anagram of Merlin, which adds a whole Arthurian concept in there, which I'm not 100% sure I'm comfortable with. It kind of works in the context of the movie. We have Wong, of course, who is my favorite character from the Doctor Strange comic books. And we have Clea. This time referred to as Clea Lake. She's not from a different realm, a ruler of a different realm, as she is in the comic book, but she's just the ingenue. 1970s
telefilm
to actually get a name from the comic book is kind of extraordinary. This is the era that Bruce Banner was changed to David Banner because somehow some executive thought Bruce sounded too homosexual for network television. So, in my opinion, to get all these names through is somewhat of a victory. So let's go into the actors in this. We have Peter Hooten playing Doctor Strange. He does a fine leading man. Personally, I prefer my Doctor Strange to have a little bit more lilt. Peter Hooten definitely plays a little wooden for my taste. And we have fan favorite, or what is referred to in the press material I'm reading right now as fan favorite. I've pretty unfamiliar with this man's work, playing the Ancient One, John Mills. Of course, many fans will know him from Goodbye, Mr. Chips. And, of course, to round out the cast, we have the only actor I have ever heard of before, Jessica Walter, playing Morgan Le Fay. Of course, you'll know her from Arrested Development as Lucille Bluth, played Misty for me, the Clint Eastwood film. I have to say, I have enjoyed a bunch of her stuff. To end off, I'm going to answer two questions nobody ever asked. Number one, why should I still see this film? You don't seem terribly hot on it. No, I don't. I can't say I particularly loved this film. It was entertaining enough, I guess. But I think fans of comic book films in general should see this film because it is the perfect representation of what comic book films once were. At one time, we couldn't just wait for the new Iron Man film or have Avengers playing in the theater. Comic book fans, to be even acknowledged in mainstream media, was rare. And any little shadow was very valuable to us. And number two, how can I see this film? And that's a more complicated question because this film's never been issued on video or DVD in the United States. So your only chance is to catch it on YouTube. Quality of the video cassette recording off television is not great, but it's passable enough to watch. I'd recommend seeing it. Until next time, I'm Chris, OUT.